This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
The current time is 6:18, and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant.
And I'm Cassini.
And we will be here with you up until 8 p.m. to keep the music and the science rolling. So thanks for joining us this week on Tech Talks. Mitch is out, but he will be back next week. So in the meantime, I have wrangled Cassini, another DJ here at WRFL, to hang out with me tonight and shoot the breeze about technology. So, you want to get started? You want to start with the dolphins?
Yeah, let's start with the dolphin attacks.
Okay. So, this is going to require a little bit of a backstory first, but dolphin attacks is the name of a new cyber attack that's been discovered by some researchers. So first, let's take a step back and talk about phone phreaking, which is one of my favorite, like, cultural urban legends of my, like, favorite little piece of American folk technology story, I guess. I'm failing to come up with a good word for this. But phone phreaking was a thing that got started in the 50s and had its heyday in the 60s when a couple of ingenuitive people were able to examine and kind of reverse engineer the way that Bell telephones worked. And since Bell telephones had the lion's share of the market on payphones, it meant that with a little bit of work, you could trick Bell brand telephones, payphones, into giving you free calls. You could kind of get a free ride on the system. So in short, here is the idea of phone phreaking. I'm going to listen to the noises that this phone makes when I put a quarter in. It's going to make some kind of a tone. And then after I feed it enough quarters, it's going to make some kind of a different tone to talk to the box at the other end that controls the payphone. And then at that point, your minute starts and you can start your call. So what people did is they learned these tones, they memorized these tones, they would have people who had perfect pitch in their hearing listen to these and be like, oh, well, that's just like a third octave C or something, or like a third octave C sharp. And so they worked through all these things and they figured out the exact pitches. 3,000 hertz is actually one of the common ones that I knew. And then they found everyday objects that would consistently do it, including penny whistles and kazoos and all of these kind of things, tuning forks that would make these exact sounds. So now you know what sounds it needs to connect the phone to the other end, and you have things on hand that can create those pitches. So if you put that all together, you can generate tones into the mouthpiece of a payphone headset and get it to do things it wasn't intended to do by hijacking that protocol, right? This is like the core of how hacking works even today, played out in the physical world. And it's called phone phreaking, and honestly, it's one of my favorite topics in the world because it's fascinating to me. Enter dolphin attack, which is a new strategy that I'm pretty sure we've actually even theorized about on this show before. But a couple of researchers were able to isolate ways. Basically, what they would do is they would take someone's voice saying the phrase, "Hey Siri," or "Hey Google," or something like that. And they would pitch it way, 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 way up. Not an octave up, not two octaves up, but like 10 or 15 octaves up, to the point it was like 24 kilohertz, which is outside of the range of 99.9% of all people alive's hearing. So now you have this basically undetectable sound that only dogs can hear, but that really doesn't matter to the speaker and to the microphone on your computer or on your phone or in your car or on your Bluetooth headset, it still is able to hear those pitches even if you don't, and most of the time it just isolates them out or ignores them. But suddenly is hearing a pitch that's higher pitched than normal, but if I do a little bit of math to it to normalize it, it looks and sounds a lot like a human voice saying, "Hey, Siri." So your iPhone recognizes that and will respond to it in time. So they did this study in several languages, including English, Chinese, German, French, and Spanish, and they had a 90% or better rating at getting Siri's attention, getting it to call people, turning airplane mode on the phone. All of these things were done without actually being audible to anyone that was around the phone. And that's where it gets wild. It's phone freaking without making the noise. And it's truly phone freaking because it's an attack that works on Siri. It works on the Google Assistant. It works on the Samsung Assistant. It works on some of those fancy cars that have infotainment systems that have voice activation. It works on basically all of them. And that's just wild.
I find it kind of frightening because any one person with the capability could access your phone and your details, pen an email with your information, or call a line that you probably shouldn't or wouldn't want to, give away your location, access the internet, all without your knowledge.
Yeah, so there are a couple of limitations that come with this research paper that were published, including the fact that this attack doesn't seem to work very well if rebroadcast over a TV or a loudspeaker. It pretty much only works if the thing emitting the noise is within 10 feet of the phone you're trying to attack. But it does make an interesting vector of attack, right? So imagine that there's a celebrity who has their personal email attached to their phone, which kind of makes sense, you know, but maybe they've got some kind of email address that's anonymized in some way so that you don't really, you know, like, what's an example? Like, I bet you that, I'm failing to come up with any good examples of celebrities right now. Hit me with one if you want to.
Taylor Swift.
I'm sure that Taylor Swift's email is not taylorswift@gmail.com. You know, I'm sure it's something probably pseudonym so that she doesn't get spam. But so imagine I'm able at some point for some reason, even just in public, to get close enough to at least a B-list celebrity and able to spam out my attack of send me an email or route an email to address that comes back to me that logs that, then you're collecting email data about people in real time around you in a proximity. You know, I don't know. I think there's some interesting vectors there. Again, it doesn't work well if rebroadcast. So the immediate concern isn't that like advertisers or cyber attacks are going to be a very effective vector in this way. Somebody still has to be physically close to you. So really, if anything, right now, I'm kind of treating this as like a fancy, interesting case of phone freaking, I guess.
Sort of like a proof of concept, I suppose.
A very good proof of concept. And it also shows a weakness in the security that we have on our phones.
I'm glad that the people who did the study were kind and upstanding enough to, you know, come forward with this instead of leaving it as a potential attack vector.
Yeah, yeah. And so the thing is, though, since this has been published, there is a little bit of a zero-day impact here, you know? It's not like all of these places necessarily knew ahead of time. Now, if these researchers were really on it, I bet they did tell Google and Apple and Amazon and everybody ahead of time that that this vector of attack exists. And certainly enough, Google, I know for a fact, and I believe Amazon as well, have both been working on protocols that recognize their users by voice and by timbre over over just any voice. And so the idea is that you could get it to only, you could get your Amazon Echo or your Google Home to only respond to you rather than anyone arbitrarily. And so I think that's probably the safest vector of attack, but or the safest protection against that attack vector. But I'm still not certain that that is foolproof. I'm sure we could sit here and spitball and come up with a couple holes.
In the source that I'm reading, the researchers said that smart speakers, smart voice assistants, they could use microphones that filter out sounds above 20 kilohertz, which is where
that's true.
Most of these signals would be coming from, is above the human range of hearing while still being audible to these microphones.
Yeah. Both between the way the hardware of the microphone is designed, as well as the ways in which we could filter it out with software, I think there's a number of ways that they can prevent at least the inaudible attacks. Of course, it's going to be pretty obvious if someone is trying to directly audibly attack your phone. So I think that's much less of a concern in my mind.
Absolutely.
But I thought that was a really particularly interesting piece. So
I'm surprised that something that was, you know, sort of forgotten by now, this exploit, managed to make a comeback in a very, what feels like an unlikely kind of vector that I wouldn't have thought about.
No, I think you're right. This is very classically, though, within the definition of phone freaking. And so it's crazy that here we are 60 years later, and it's barely any more sophisticated of an attack, and certainly not, by today's technical standards, any harder than playing a kazoo, you know. But that's interesting to me. It's interesting to me nonetheless that here we are still using the term and meaning it in the same way, that phones, albeit that the payoff of attacking someone's cell phone today is very different than the payoff of attacking a payphone in 1965, you know?
Potentially much more life-ruining.
Potentially. Albeit much more likely to be patched quickly. I think we could see all the major players here in the next probably 6 months within their next big patch release put out stuff to stop this pretty much all the way around. You know, like we said, it could just be a software fix. So,
I still very much enjoy the new name, though. Freaking is very fun and all, but the image brought to mind by dolphin attacks.
No, yeah, that's fair. Dolphin attack is the name of that attack, named because dolphins have that sonic, ultrasonic echolocation kind of thing that they do like bats. So this could have easily just been named bat attack, but I think dolphin attack is, for lack of a better word, a more clever name. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for tuning in. The current time is 6:31, and you were tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. We'll be back here in just a little bit. We got a couple more songs headed your way, and then we'll be back to hit up some more technology. That last track that you just heard right before we got on air was Blue Blood, and that was off the album Love is an Art. And then back before that, it was Cafecito by Ursula 1000. So keep it locked here all the way to the left, at your only alternative left, WRFL Lexington. Welcome back to Tech Talks here on WRFL.
Well, I've got a story for you.
Hit me with it.
New York Times reports that the Boston Red Sox have been using Apple Watches to steal signs against the Yankees. This is a fun one. Basically, they've been sending messages back and forth between their Apple Watches. They've got somebody watching the catcher with video, watching for signs, and they relay that using text message to somebody's Apple Watch in the dugout, and they convey it to the batters. And it also happens vice versa, whereas the batting tactics are relayed using a video back to pitchers on the Red Sox. And I think this is just really great because, I mean, it's not really a vector that's ever existed before now, before wearables ever came into vogue.
Yeah, so previously, you know, and it's been going on for years that somebody in the NFL or somebody in the major leagues could be recording against their opponents and then using that information later on, but there was always a delay to it. You would look at somebody's tactics, and then the next day in the series, you would play it out. And of course, recording someone while playing the game and then using that to gain information later is banned for obvious reasons, because it's kind of counter to, you know, everything that is strategic in those games. But the idea that somebody can practically live time communicate silently with each other about what's happening I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm. I'm envisioning a scenario where a batter receives some texts on his Apple Watch, maybe three vibration stands for a certain type of pitch. That gives him a kind of advantage instantaneously, where before he didn't have one, which is interesting. Whenever I first read the headline, I thought that maybe they were reading accelerometer data from the watches. I realized that that's a bit of a sophisticated attack for baseball. But does open up perhaps a few vectors that should be covered if they aren't already. Whereas attackers using that kind of accelerometer data for less than nefarious purposes, I don't think that in many cases it would be that harmful to know which way your arm is moving. But whenever it comes to baseball and other professions that use those kinds of signals, then definitely becomes a problem.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is that people have always, especially in baseball, been looking to try to like one-up each other in these subtle ways that they could. So, you know, of course, as soon as there was a pin that you could fit inside of something discreet that you could take videos or photos with, you know, within a year or two, we had teams getting busted for using them to record other teams to play against. But, you know, we see that now kind of coming back again with the allegations that they're using their smartwatches. And so I really don't think this will go away, especially now as wearables are becoming more common. If anything, I think we're going to see wearables quickly be eradicated altogether out of, even if it turns out that they weren't using them in a malicious way, I think we'll still see the MLB strike out everything involving wearables. Like, you just won't be able to wear a wearable on the field because there's too much information that you can move around too subtly. And kind of extending the thought of this, I think the thought very often goes, there's computers, and then there's wearables, and then there's, like, you know, in the far future from here, there's like implants that you can get with cybernetics and stuff. And I've just now come to realize that would be a huge pitfall that would hold back something like a cybernetic implant, is that clearly, all of the major sports are going to prevent that kind of a thing from existing in their players, because you want to talk about silent communication between players, that would be it. So maybe that's the future of what stops the cybernetic nightmare, is that it's just a whole bunch of kids who don't want to get implants because they all want to be football players. You know, and baseball stars. So they just, you know, mm-hmm. I'd never really considered that before, but there, I think that social pressure would be enough to stave that off, beyond the social pressure that already exists, that I think would prevent that kind of a implanted wearable from existing long term.
Absolutely. I think that those kinds of cybernetics, I'm not sure that they would ever come into vogue. A lot of people seem uncomfortable with...
I think people are inherently uncomfortable. I think there's always people that will want to, and always a larger group that will not want to, you know? I don't know. If it's feasible, I think we're going to come to see it come to be in our lifetime. So I'm curious to see what the adoption is when that comes to be.
I think the big turning point will be whenever people willingly start to replace body parts with their cybernetic counterparts. I don't know that we've ever seen that in any capacity. I don't know anybody who would willingly want to replace an arm for a bionic version, because as of now, they're inferior.
Yeah.
But whenever that does come to pass, I feel like that'll be the sort of sea change that'll dictate whether cybernetics ever make it big or fall by the wayside as a niche thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a really good measuring stick. I hadn't considered that before, but that is a good thing to measure by, to say, have we arrived at cybernetics? The answer is yes, if people will willingly take them over their own natural biology. So, yeah, that's really insightful.
But in our current future, that is to say within a year, maybe two or three, I feel like these wearable exploits are going to have to be policed even more, because from the source that I'm reading, potentially places like casinos could ban things like that. Imagine somebody with camera access taking video of hands from the dealer, or counting cards from other players and transmitting that signal directly to somebody's wearable. Whether using an instant messaging app or some kind of a sort of kinesthetic signal, you could throw an entire game in your favor by wearing some, like a watch.
Yeah, especially if you set two people at a poker table together that were on a team. The amount of communication that you could do effectively, silently there, I think, has a lot of potential damage. So I think you're right. I think if wearables aren't already banned in most casinos, I think they absolutely will be here in the next year or two, as we get more sophisticated with what we can do with them, you know?
At least until augmented reality comes around. Imagining something like an incognito Google Glass, giving somebody the odds on their hands, or live streaming rules and strategies to them, especially in
running those calculations like on the
poker,
fly,
counting cards for you at blackjack, which is already banned. But I feel like as wearables grow more and more prevalent, they're going to be banned more and more, but they're also going to be harder and harder to police because of their wearable nature. It's very hard to get somebody to forfeit their watch to let you look into it. And the same might come to pass for whatever future augmented reality rigs might exist.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like kind of a turn that we took there, but I feel like that was all very interesting discussion there. So, it's supposedly the Red Sox?
Yeah.
Allegedly?
The Yankees general manager filed a complaint fairly recently. Actually 2 days ago, and claimed that the Red Sox were cheating using these Apple Watches. And the Red Sox filed a counterclaim saying the exact same thing, which is interesting. The general manager said, "We're 100% comfortable that this is not an ongoing issue, but I fear that it might be."
Wow. All right. Well, thank you for that. We're going to take another quick break here and get back to it. Got another song lined up for you. This one from Dent May's Across the Universe. This track, the seventh track on that album, is called Face Down. So keep it locked all the way to the left here at your only alternative left, WRFL Lexington.
you're hearing this, that means podcast advertising works. WRFL is now accepting new applications for advertising in a selection of our original podcast series. If you or someone you know owns a business in Central Kentucky and would be interested in advertising on WRFL's original podcasts, please email development@wrfl.fm.
The current time is 7:23 here at WRFL. You're tuned in to Tech Talks. My name is Grant.
And I'm Cassini.
And we will be here with you up until 8 p.m. So keep it locked all the way to the left here at WRFL. Getting us started off, go ahead, Cassini.
All right. Well, how's this for a headline? One company's quest to build the perfect phone for gamers.
What you missed while we were off is probably a good couple minutes of laughing right off the bat, talking about this article, because that headline is so vague in so many dimensions. When they say the phone for gamers, are we talking about, because there are two fairly distinct groups of, and people fall into the trap of calling them the casual group and the core group, but I don't think that's the right, I think we can be more specific here. We can call them the mobile gaming group, and largely exclusively, but not entirely exclusive to that, is those that play on consoles and larger devices. So you have basically the small arms and the large arms of those two worlds. So firstly, which one are they talking about?
Yeah, that's still up for debate. This CEO is called Wonder, headed by Andy Kleinman and Yves Bihar. And they've got this idea for this wonderful ecosystem of hardware, games, movies, music, all bundled together in this one device that's supposedly, as they put it, overclocked, bigger than your average phone, ready to carry around in your pocket and play games like you do at home.
So we're talking about a big phone like you or I have, that you can watch Netflix on and play a mobile game on? Because I'm really not convinced how this is any different than the phone I currently have in my hand right now. I'm really not, I'm not feeling the sell. Sell me on it.
Yeah, they're not selling me either. This startup has $14 million, which in startup, you know, startup culture isn't very much, but $14 million. Thrown at them for this idea of this unified ecosystem. They want to be the Nintendo Switch, but for everything, not just Nintendo.
That's a really lazy tagline that the tech world has gotten very comfy with. The X of Y, the Switch of phones, the Uber of Snapchats, The Uber, but for dogs, is an actual tagline that I have seen on a product before. I think it's an app called Rover. I don't really remember, but it was like a dog walking service. And their original tagline, I swear to you, was Uber, but for dogs.
Uber, but for dogs.
And that's not a tagline.
That's not a good one.
That's a vague equivalency that one person that sort of knows about a thing makes to another person. You know, like that's not a meaningful tagline.
This whole article is just a treasure trove. So they're bolstered by the success of Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch, which they seem to think represents a sort of change in mobile gaming, because the Nintendo Switch's 3-hour mobile battery life is enough to convince you to carry around the Switch to play Breath of the Wild on.
So, hold on. Let me give up my 36-hour battery life on my phone in exchange for something that we might be able to eke 6 out of, so that I can play something, albeit probably further watered down, Breath of the Wild-ish on my phone.
That's what they're wanting.
That's the sell.
That's the idea. They want you to be able to play games in this ecosystem. They're imagining a system of external graphics, much like the Switch, other peripherals, different game suppliers. There are just so many problems with this. This unified ecosystem that they want involves, let me see, hardware, games, music, movies, TV, and wireless service, which could mean cellular service, into a single package for $100 a month, which poses so many problems. First off, hardware suppliers, where do you get that? Where do you eke out a share in that kind of hardware supply in a market dominated by Google and Apple? Games, you're going to have to make Microsoft want to make games for you. Music, you're going to have to pair up. Music, movies, and TV, you have to pair up with media giants, all of which takes time, money, and may not, just clutters up what could be. They're trying to remake the Switch as a phone, is the extent that I'm getting here, without the motion controls.
This feels like such a uphill fight.
I feel like they're fighting for something that might not even be that good if it comes out. I enjoy the Switch. I think it's innovative, and I enjoy the change that it's representing. But I do not think that something capable of Switch-level graphics or Switch-level gameplay is...
I mean, I think the Switch is an example of something that does one thing twice very well. It is, at its core, a game console that is basically only a game console. You don't have a whole lot of other peripherals. I don't even think there's a Bluetooth card on it. It's just Wi-Fi and whatever magic makes the controllers work. It's probably just some selective band Bluetooth thing or something. I don't know. But, you know, so like it does one thing very well, play games. And the idea that I would have a meaningfully powerful GPU graphics processor on my phone feels kind of silly, because probably 90% of the time I'm on my phone, I'm not even doing anything graphically intensive. I'm just looking at some icons on a screen and then clicking something. Yeah. Not even like rendering a video or doing anything else. I'm just clicking through options and buttons.
I purposefully limit myself on games that I play on my phone. I need the battery more than anything to
last.
Is one of the bigger problems that I'm finding with this is, how are you going to make this object last? If you don't have the battery to back it up, what good is it as a phone?
Which is exactly why I'm willing to, in my mind, justify and put up with a 3 or 4 hour battery life on a Switch, is because at the end of the day, it's a game console. It's not my
phone.
It's not something that I have to have critically glued to me. People, you know, we've all gotten used to just having our phones on us. And so in that way, it dies. You shrug, you say, oh, well, it died, and then you just charge it when you get home. Like, it's not a big deal, but, like, I think everyone who lives in the modern age that is currently in the working world or in a environment in which people need to get a hold of them knows the crisis that is, like, your phone is at 3% and you can't get to a charger. And you just know it's going to die, and then no one's going to be able to contact you for a couple hours, and you just kind of shrug and keep going. Like, the benefits of having something Switch-esque on my phone don't outweigh the consequences of putting something Switch-esque on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way in the world that you could make enough performance enhancements to get that battery life above 6 hours. There's just no way.
There's no way unless you wore a battery pack, which I'm sure is something that they're considering, because they're bolstered by the fact that Breath of the Wild plays on a mobile processor. They seem to think that this technology is increasing at the rate where they can put a processor like the one that's included on the Switch onto a phone and then make the battery last long enough, make the entire phone tenable enough to be a phone.
So when we were talking about this earlier, the way in which you said that, the mobile processor on the Switch, I thought there's no way that's true. And so the Switch has on it a Tegra X1, which is categorized by NVIDIA as a mobile performance processor, but something that has the horsepower of a small laptop really doesn't I feel like it's a misclassification to call it something purely a mobile processor, and to put it in the same category with like a Snapdragon 800. You know, like those aren't remotely the same thing.
Comparing this Tegra X1 to what I have on my phone, a Snapdragon 821, just isn't tenable. You can call it a mobile processor because it's a processor on something that's mobile, but it is not designed for mobile processes in the same sense that the Snapdragon is. It doesn't allocate those tasks as well. It's a games console, so of course it's going to run those games well, but we've seen so many products where they try to make a jack-of-all-trades approach, and they just fail. We've seen Sony's Xperia Play, the Nokia N-Gage, still brings a tear to my eye. There's the Xbox phone and the PlayStation phone, bet you haven't heard of those. These don't work, and this company seems to think that it's because people, the ones that have come out aren't very good, but I think the real reason is that nobody wants them.
All right, here we go. I got some stats. It's not ideal, but these are some real-world tests on a handful of devices. Namely, things you're going to recognize: the Apple iPhone 6 Plus, the Apple iPad Air 2, and then the new NVIDIA Shield tablet, which is the thing that has the X1 in it as well. So it's very Switch-esque. So the iPhone 6 Plus pulls 18, almost 19 frames per second on a Manhattan benchmark. The NVIDIA Shield, the old generation, got 31. And then the iPad Air, second gen, got 32. On the new iteration, the NVIDIA Shield clocks in at 28, where the iPad clocked in at 25. So we're talking about something that's like, you would need the processing power of something like the Switch or the newest generation of an iPad to keep up with
those kinds of games.
And running that on a phone's battery just doesn't feel feasible to me.
And that's not even getting past fitting it inside of the phone. The form factor of the phone sounds like it would be a hassle. I'm imagining ports, because they want this to be a hardware and software ecosystem. And also fitting that kind of battery and that kind of processor on it. If you want a phone that's the size of a Nintendo Switch, be my guest, but I don't actually feel like keeping my phone in my backpack. My phone stays, you know, on my hip, because that's what it's for. It's my phone. I text, I call, I listen to music.
But if you're willing to put up with a car phone that you keep in your backpack, then boy, you can make it work.
You can make it work. Oh, golly. This, just everything about the startup just sort of grates against me. They have $14 million. I believe I've already said that, but to you and me, that's an insane amount of money to be thrown at pure hypotheticals. They don't have any kind of hardware mock-ups, just ideas floating around about this perfect phone for gamers, and that name is still just as awful as whenever we first said it.
That's ambitious. We'll let you know what comes of this, if anything. I'm sure we'll be back to lampoon it until they finally get something out of the door. But in the meantime, this is Tech Talks here on WRFL. So thanks for tuning in. We're going to be checking out. So thanks for checking out with us here at WRFL. You can stream with us anytime at WRFL.fm. Or if you want to catch parts of this episode or another episode of Tech Talks or Trivial Thursdays or anything else that you listen to here and you missed it, you can head to WRFL.fm and check out the podcasts. With that, we'll be back next week, so keep it locked, and we'll see you around.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.